This is Dakota Free Press. I'm Corey Heidelberger, and we're talking with Randy Seiler, Democratic candidate for the nomination for Attorney General. Mr. Seiler, how are you today?
I'm good, Corey, and call me Randy. It's a pleasure to be in Aberdeen. I'm here to participate in Boys State.
I was going to say, you came to Aberdeen, and what a noble cause, Boys State. Have you been involved with Boys State previously?
Not to any great extent. They asked me to come up and talk a little bit about being a federal prosecutor, about jurisdiction in Indian Country, about the federal criminal justice system, and I'm happy to do that.
And it really is interesting. I mean, Boys State does cover all three branches of government, executive, legislative, and the judiciary branch, right?
Exactly.
And judiciary is where your area of expertise is. Tell us, just for those who aren't following the Democratic race for Attorney General nomination closely, give us a quick rundown of your background in judicial affairs.
Judicial affairs. I went to the University of South Dakota School of Law. I graduated in 1980. I was awarded, if you will, the Gavel Award, which is awarded annually by the faculty to the outstanding student in the graduating class. Following my law school career, and I was editor-in-chief of the Law Review while I was at the University of South Dakota, I clerked for a federal judge in Sioux Falls, the Honorable Fred J. Nickel. And following that, I returned to where I grew up in terms of that neck of the woods in north central South Dakota around Mobridge and Harriet. I was born in Harriet. I was born in Mobridge and raised in Harriet. My parents were still alive and living in Harriet, and I wanted to return to that area, and that's what I did. So I practiced law in Mobridge for 14 years. And then spent 22 years with the U.S. Attorney's Office as a federal prosecutor in various capacities, 14 years as a violent crime prosecutor, 5 years as the chief deputy or first assistant to U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson, and then the last three as U.S. Attorney nominated by President Obama.
Okay, so over 20 years in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Yes, sir.
And that was primarily as a prosecutor?
Primarily, certainly within the U.S. Attorney's Office, having total responsibility at various times for the day-to-day management of the office as a line prosecutor, prosecuting violent crime, prosecuting white-collar crime, public corruption, child sexual abuse, and then obviously both as chief deputy and as U.S. Attorney, being responsible for the overall management of the office.
Sure. So just ballpark, as a U.S. attorney or deputy U.S. attorney, how much time do you actually have to spend then in the courtroom actually trying cases?
You know, during the first 14 years of my career, I was lead counsel on over 500 felony federal criminal cases in terms of being involved, everything from search warrants to review of the investigative reports to making prosecution decisions to presenting those matters to a federal grand jury to doing all of the court appearances to arguing suppression motions to actually doing the jury trials, pleas of guilty. So in addition to the 500 cases that I was lead counsel on, approximately 75 of those went to jury trial. And I tried those as lead counsel. Most of the others were pleas. And some of those obviously were appealed to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis, wrote the appellate brief, argued before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Sure. So we like to think of prosecutors in terms of, you know, the courtroom drama and laying down the law before the jury and the judge. But even there, you said out of over 500 cases, only 75, you said, actually
yes,
went to the trial stage.
Yes. Most of the cases, in terms of at least at the federal level, I think this is generally universally true across South Dakota.
At the state, in state level courts as
right,
well.
Right. End up in some sort of negotiated plea agreement between the prosecutor, whether it's the state's attorney or whether it's an assistant United States attorney at the federal level, end up in some sort of plea discussion, negotiations, and a plea to the charges.
Sure. So there's a lot of dealing with, you know, with defendants and with their counsel dealing with the evidence they're presenting, you know, trying to come to agreements like that if it's, you know, short of going to trial.
Absolutely. And you know, the prosecutor's role and responsibility is not just to secure convictions, but to also see that justice is done, that the defendant's due process and constitutional rights are protected. So that's also an important consideration for prosecutors at all levels in terms of being involved in the criminal justice system. And, you know, not every case that's referred or that's investigated is prosecuted. Certainly prosecutors have discretion to look at and review investigative reports done by police departments, whatever federal law enforcement agency or state agency may be involved, and to make decisions with respect to pretrial diversions, for example, or some other disposition, or to not charge at all. One of the things that I'm very proud of is that in my tenure as U.S. attorney, prosecutions were up, but also pretrial diversions were up. So we were looking at cases from the context of, does this individual warrant a second chance? Really, is it appropriate for a federal felony case, or should we try to arrive at some sort of alternative disposition like a pretrial diversion? One of the other things we did, Corey, is we worked actively with tribal prosecutors at the tribal court level. We named several tribal prosecutors as special assistant United States attorneys. We'd consult with them about cases that arose in Indian country and make decisions jointly with them on whether a case should go federal or whether this would be an appropriate case for a tribal disposition. As you may know, each of the 9 sovereign tribes, sovereign nations in South Dakota, have their own independent court systems, prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, law enforcement agencies. And so in South Dakota, they have federal criminal justice system, obviously dealing with federal crimes and federal offenses. You have state offenses that are primarily prosecuted by the state's attorneys and the attorney general's office. And then you also have the tribal court level prosecuted by tribal prosecutors.
Sure. So now moving then from the U.S. attorney's office and your role as a prosecutor there to the state attorney general's office, it seems there may be some differences in kind of the duties and the daily workflow of those two roles. Do you see any major differences between a U.S. attorney and an elected state attorney general?
Not significantly. I think that they are substantially the same, and the focus is in a number of areas. One, obviously, is doing justice, making decisions with respect to prosecution of cases, what cases should be prosecuted on a daily basis. Secondly, there is an administrative aspect, certainly, of the Attorney General's office and working with the legislature. And the same thing goes with respect to the U.S. Attorney's office. We also defended cases that arose in civil court, in the sense that if anybody sued the United States government, the U.S. Attorney's office was responsible for defending the United States in civil court actions. And the Attorney General's office has a comparable function in some matters in terms of defending the laws of the state of South Dakota.
And then in terms of like investigating crimes, I guess the U.S. Attorney's office and the Department of Justice, you work with the FBI?
We work primarily with federal law enforcement agencies, whether it's the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and most of the federal level departments have their own offices of inspector general, which are authorized to investigate criminal offenses dealing with money awarded by, like, the Department of Education, Department of Agriculture, for example.
And then how would that compare to the Attorney General Office's relationship with, I guess, South Dakota's FBI, the DCI, the Division of Criminal Investigation? What's the Attorney General's role there, and how would that compare to your interactions with the FBI and in the U.S. Attorney's Office?
You know, at the federal level, the FBI and a lot of the federal agencies are a part of the Department of Justice, an executive branch agency whose head is the Attorney General. At the state level, the Division of Criminal Investigation is also in the Attorney General's office. The South Dakota Attorney General has responsibility for the crime lab, for the radio systems in terms of radio dispatch for the Division of Criminal Investigation. They also have an appellate section. So there's a lot of comparability with respect to the U.S. Attorney's Office and the South Dakota Attorney General's Office. The South Dakota Attorney General also has general oversight and supervisory responsibility to a degree with respect to the state's attorneys. So each county has its own state's attorney, but they operate fairly autonomously with respect to making prosecution decisions in their respective counties and don't consult with the South Dakota Attorney General's office on a regular basis with respect to routine matters, if you will.
Let's turn then to some specific state issues. And we've heard, I think certainly our current Attorney General, Marty Jackley, in his campaign for another office, in another party's primary, he's talked a lot about crime and drug use in the state and the interaction there, and we've heard other candidates talk about that too. Tell us your perspective about, you know, the increase in drug crimes in the state, and I guess in particular in meth usage. What do you see as your priorities as Attorney General to address that growing problem?
You know, I think being involved in the investigation of drug crimes and working with the Drug Enforcement Administration at the federal level, working with drug task forces at the federal level that included individuals like FBI agents, state DCI agents, tribal criminal law enforcement officers. We had drug task forces at the federal level operating around the state. So bringing that perspective to the South Dakota Attorney General's office, I think, is important with respect to experience and leadership and vision and the manner in which you address the drug problem at the state level. But the Attorney General's office at the South Dakota state level needs to be decisively engaged, in my estimation, in terms of not only the enforcement, but also with respect to the prevention and the treatment and recovery. Treatment and recovery, I think, is the key aspect of addressing the meth problem in South Dakota. When I left the U.S. Attorney's Office and retired, I was at my home in Fort Pierre when I was contacted after the first of the year by the Hughes County Commission and local law enforcement. The Hughes County State's Attorney was leaving, and they needed an interim State's Attorney to assist and help in Hughes County with the prosecution of offenses in Hughes County. And so I entered into a contract with the Hughes County Commission to provide State's Attorney services for several months at the beginning of the year. And on our first felony court date, Corey, which is basically every other Tuesday, we saw 39 felony cases, 38 of which had a meth connection. So it is driving the criminal justice system. And I think the Attorney General needs to set the culture with respect to how those cases are going to be handled. Certainly enforcement is important, but as I said, it is a three-legged stool, and prevention certainly needs to be a part of that. We need to do outreach with schools. We need to do outreach with other agencies involved. I want to go out into those communities that are most impacted by the drug problem and sit down with those individuals and get their perspective about what's the way to approach this. But also South Dakota needs to step up in terms of both mental health and treatment. When people in crisis turn to drugs, the solution shouldn't be a felony and being sent off to the South Dakota State Penitentiary. There needs to be drug courts and other treatment options and alternatives and stronger mental health counseling, and there needs to be some opportunity for treatment and recovery on a long-term basis. Methamphetamine rewires your brain almost like no other drug, and it's not a simple matter of sending somebody off for a 28-day treatment program. It's a long-term commitment to treatment and recovery. And we've been moderately successful with drug courts. I've been involved with drug courts as the Hughes County State's Attorney and working for the State's Attorney's Office. I'm a big believer in drug courts, but I also think we need to strengthen our outreach and the relationships we have with community outreach programs, with mental health centers out in the community, with getting the state more decisively engaged in making a commitment in the same way we have to incarcerating people, to getting people into treatment and some sort of recovery program.
Now, I like the phrase you used in the middle of there, talking about setting the culture. It sounds like to some extent what you're talking about is using the Attorney General's office as sort of a bully pulpit to, like you said, do outreach, get people aware, get people thinking about these alternatives. In all those social services you talked about, you know, prevention, mental health counseling, treatment, all of those things, to what extent can the Attorney General actually actualize those policies? And to what extent are you talking about just saying, hey, as Attorney General, I'm going to push the other responsible agencies to create and enact those kinds of policies? How do you make those social services happen from your position?
It is the culture that the Attorney General can set in the office, and its leadership and its vision. As U.S. Attorney, I was just not concerned about prosecuting and putting people in jail. We worked with Avira, for example, in terms of a series of statewide conferences addressing issues such as opioids, such as sex trafficking, such as child sexual abuse, such as rights for people with disabilities. So the Attorney General's office cannot exist in isolation, in a sense. You know, having a farm background, I like to make reference to the fact that it can't be two or three different silos that are each individual and not interconnected. There needs to be some interconnection and some relationship, some vision, some leadership to do outreach, to get these agencies involved, to meet with social services and mental health centers, to work with the local mental health task forces, to look at options with respect to making sure that people who are in crisis, who do turn to drugs, aren't just treated as criminals, that we look at their conduct and don't judge them as bad people because they made a difficult decision at a time when they were in crisis.
And you can make a difference in that too from, I guess, sentencing and sentencing recommendations and prosecution practices, and even in kind of the plea bargaining deals, right?
Absolutely. Prosecutors have that discretion in terms of, you talk about plea bargains, of looking at a case that maybe was an ingestion type case, and instead of insisting on it being a felony, looking at it from the perspective of it should be a misdemeanor, is really the best solution to hang a young person with a felony early on in their life, which will likely impact them throughout the course of their life. And one of the things I think we need to look at, Corey, is South Dakota, I think, is the only state, maybe with the exception of Utah, that criminalizes the ingestion of drugs. So it's a class 5 felony in South Dakota to ingest methamphetamine. So if you have a UA and you test hot for methamphetamine, you can be charged with a class 5 felony, even though you don't possess it at that particular point, except in your body.
So that's, you're not talking legalization of ingestion. You're just saying we're one of maybe the only state that makes it a felony rather than a misdemeanor.
Exactly.
And that felony status certainly ties your hands as a prosecutor, or any state's attorney right now, in terms of whether they can recommend treatment or, you know, some kind of counseling rather than a prison sentence.
I don't know if it ties their hands, but certainly it's a factor in terms of charging decisions and whether we should be criminalizing ingestion when there isn't any distribution, where an individual in crisis turned to drugs as an alternative to some other decision-making process. Should we be charging them with felonies? And granted, prosecutors do have the discretion right now of not charging a felony, of only charging a misdemeanor. But I think in terms of the record numbers of individuals that we're incarcerating right now, we need to look at that. My understanding is that the Legislative Research Council did some preliminary analysis with respect to making ingestion a class 1 misdemeanor as opposed to a class 5 felony. and that there would be $1 million saving in terms of county jail incarceration rates and a $5 million saving with respect to South Dakota State Penitentiary incarceration rates.
Just from that legal classification.
And that's just part of the leadership and the culture that I'm talking about in terms of looking at this from a system, ecosystem approach, from all aspects of it. I don't think I have all of the solutions or all of the answers. I want to sit down, as I said, with various individuals in the communities that are most impacted, with mental health professionals, with social services, with the ACLU, with other individuals, and get their input into what's the best way to address this issue in South Dakota in the best way possible for all of us.
Now, another issue that, well, we Democrats have been bringing up for longer than our Republicans, but now in their primary, the Republicans are also finally picking up on this issue, is corruption in South Dakota state government. Our current Republican gubernatorial candidates are duking it out about whether our current attorney general did enough to either prevent or catch or now prosecute the corruption that we've seen in the EB-5 program, in Gear Up, and now in this fake fish farm in Brookings, and all sorts of things going on. It's like corruption's coming out their ears, which we've been telling them for a while, but it's nice to hear Christy and Marty talk about this. But as a general question, what do you think an attorney general, or you as attorney general, could do to, you know, tamp down some of this corruption that we're hearing Republicans and Democrats complain about now?
You know, again, I think it boils down to a track record in terms of when you look at the role that I played as a prosecutor and as U.S. attorney. While I was U.S. attorney, I initiated a multi-state, multi-department task force called Guardians. And it was intended to address issues of public corruption across South Dakota and in Indian Country, making sure that money that was awarded to communities, to tribes, to various organizations was used for the purposes that it was intended for. And so we brought together 14 federal agencies led by an assistant United States attorney who was a prosecutor to specifically target and focus and coordinate investigations with respect to public corruption. And as my recollection is, when I left the U.S. Attorney's Office, they had indicted something like over 20 or 25 people with respect to public corruption. And again, that's the kind of leadership that I want to bring to the Attorney General's Office with respect to addressing ethics and public corruption.
What would a South Dakota version of that Guardians program you talked about look like?
I think it would look like bringing together multi-agencies. Again, it's not just a Division of Criminal Investigation issue. It might be Sheriff's Office. It might be federal agencies working with the Social Security Administration. And that's happening now to some extent. But at the same time, I think when we look and talk about public corruption, we need to look at and distinguish issues with respect to ethics versus violations of criminal law. They go hand in hand, I think, when you talk about public corruption and that perception with respect to EB-5, with respect to Gear Up, and all of the other issues. Ethics sometimes is the issue with respect to individuals that are in state government feathering their own nest, if you will, so that when they leave state government, they have a golden parachute and are landing with some program that they funded as part of their state government responsibilities. So I think we have to look at and strengthen our conflict of interest and our ethics laws with respect to South Dakota.
Right, because absent ethics laws, the AG doesn't touch it. That's just for the press and people to complain about.
Initiated Measure 22 set in place some of those conflict of interest provisions. And shortly after its enactment, it was, of course, modified, if you will. Some people use the term gutted by the South Dakota State Legislature. So I think we need to look at the ethics, the conflict of interest provisions. The criminal aspects of public corruption have to, of course, have a basis in criminal law. Marty Jackley or any other attorney general doesn't have the authority to charge, to make any charge that doesn't have a basis in South Dakota state criminal statute. So to some extent then, if we don't have adequate criminal statutes to address conflicts of interest and public corruption, that ties the prosecutor's hands. So I'm also in favor of looking at a comprehensive review of our criminal statutes in this area so that we can more fully address issues with respect to EB-5, Gear Up, and those type of programs. The other aspect of that is it's troubling to me that there were major warning signs within the context of state government with respect to the administration of the EB-5 program that percolated for a prolonged period of time before it percolated out of state government and all of that. So I think we need to make sure that the various departments that are charged with the responsibility of administering these programs have clear, concise guidelines and reporting requirements, and that the Attorney General's office with respect to making prosecution decisions has clear guidelines in place so that there's an understanding by the public of what they look at when we make prosecution decisions. So it's an effort to bring transparency to every aspect of state government, from prosecution decisions to the administration of these programs across the board.
Now, I do hear the psychic energy of my readers demanding that I ask this particular question. They've read a lot about EB-5. The U.S. Attorney's Office under Brendan Johnson did look into what was happening with EB-5 in South Dakota, but I believe they announced in, I think, 2015, I want to say, that their investigation was closed and no prosecutions were issued. Is there any perspective that you can give about what the U.S. Attorney's Office found when it was looking at South Dakota's EB-5 program, if you were even involved in that portion of the investigation?
I was with the South Dakota U.S. Attorney's Office, and I was involved. I can tell you, based upon in the context of my professional responsibilities and my responsibilities as far as privacy and the Department of Justice is concerned, that the matter was investigated by federal law enforcement. At some level, Corey, I will tell you that we coordinated and involved the Department of Justice Office of Public Corruption. So it wasn't just the South Dakota Attorney General's or the South Dakota U.S. Attorney's Office that was looking at this. There were aspects of it that we involved public corruption section from the Department of Justice, and they were decisively engaged in terms of the review and the analysis and the decision making with respect to that.
Let's turn to another issue that comes up. Lawsuits that our Attorney General's office has pushed, either challenging certain laws or defending laws that our legislature has passed. Big one is kind of the online sales tax measure that did go to the Supreme Court this spring, and we're awaiting a decision on that. Just curious, have you reviewed that, the arguments in that case? What's your thought about the constitutionality of online sales tax and remote collection from remote sellers?
You know, I agree generally with the position that Marty Jackley took with respect to this matter. And you know, Marty's a friend of mine. He was my boss for 3 years when he was with the U.S. Attorney. I respect Marty. And with respect to that particular lawsuit, my sense is Marty got it right. I do support the efforts and his arguments that he did set forth. But at the same time, with respect to some of the other decisions that he made while he was Attorney General with respect to involving the state of South Dakota in lawsuits like the challenge to the Affordable Care Act, some of the other lawsuits that the state engaged in with respect to the Environmental Protection Agency, we disagree with respect to those. I think that the key factor in terms of whether the state of South Dakota and the South Dakota Attorney General should be involved in being involved in a lawsuit, obviously, shouldn't be based on politics or race or money. It should be based on, obviously, what's in the best interest of the people of state of South Dakota. And I think the sales tax lawsuit fits that criteria. With respect to Obamacare, I think those lawsuits and engaging the state of South Dakota in those lawsuits had overtones of politics, which I disagree with.
I don't know if there are any lawsuits like that, maybe that you would view as more political than grounded in good, sound legal reasoning that are going on right now. But if you become Attorney General, are you in a position where you could say, yeah, the state signed on to this lawsuit in 2017, but we're pulling out. We're no longer party to this thing. Can you change lawsuits that the previous Attorney General has put into motion or had been put into motion against him by people challenging our laws?
Yes. The short answer is yes. Certainly it depends a little bit in terms of the Attorney General's responsibility with respect to defending the Constitution of the laws of the state of South Dakota or particular statutory type provisions. But if it was a decision that's made by the Attorney General without involvement by the legislature or the governor's office, something like that, the Attorney General does have discretion to make decisions with respect to the commencement or the dismissal of some of those lawsuits.
Are there any pending actions you have in mind that you'd say we need to get out of that?
You know, none that I want to comment on at this point in terms of making a rash judgment about that doesn't have any merit or isn't in the best interest of the state of South Dakota. But I would certainly undertake a review of the types of lawsuits and litigation that the state of South Dakota is currently involved in.
Attorney General, each year Marty Jackley has brought forward a legislative package and lobbied for it in the legislature, in the session. Do you have a set of bills that you would like to promote or laws that you'd like to either add to, amend, or maybe repeal in your first year as Attorney General?
Again, quickly, with respect to looking at issues with respect to methamphetamine, with respect to drugs and those matters, certainly if drug dealers are engaged in dealing in South Dakota, certainly the penalties should be more severe for them. But I think we need to look at and review issues with respect to what we're what we're charging as felonies and what we're charging as misdemeanors. I also want to review the public corruption statutes, the statutes with respect to transparency. Those kinds of matters would be my initial priority with respect to this. And the other thing we haven't talked about, Corey, at the expense of opening this up at the end, is guns and school safety. We can't be afraid to run from a discussion about guns because we're afraid we may not have an A-plus rating from the NRA. We have to talk about kids in our schools getting killed and what we need to do to keep our kids safe. We're not immune. We need to have a realistic discussion by bringing everybody to the table to talk about guns, to talk about school safety. I don't believe that 18-year-olds need to be allowed to buy assault rifles or bump stocks or banana clips, but we also need to look at the underlying causes. So this involves people from all aspects of the gun culture, if you will, bringing them to the table. Everybody from the NRA to school administrators to social service agencies to school officials to school boards to students. How can we keep our kids safe? We're killing more kids in our schools than we are in the military in 2018, and something needs to be done about that. We had an incident in Harrisburg where a kid brought a gun to school. Nobody was seriously injured. A school official was shot. Thankfully, he recovered. But we can't just run from that because it involves guns.
So no hard policies yet on that, but certainly you'd like to lead that conversation as our top law enforcement official.
I absolutely would. I don't think we can run from it. We have to bring everybody together. I don't have all the solutions in terms of what needs to be done, but I think the kind of discussion that they had in Florida is a nice place to start in terms of bringing everybody together. I mean, that's what leadership is about. That's what vision is about. That's what experience is about. I have the relationships with the police chiefs and the Sheriff's Association and the state's attorneys to bring everybody together to get that done.
Another complicated issue, you mentioned your work with our neighbors, our fellow South Dakotans in Indian Country, 9 independent tribes, each with their own independent judiciary. What are your thoughts as Attorney General about the state of cooperation between the state and state law enforcement and the tribes and their courts and cops? How's it looking, and what could you do as Attorney General to make it work better?
I've spent most of my professional career working in Indian country from the time I was in private practice in Mobridge, where I served as a special judge for the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, through my time with the U.S. Attorney's Office, where I served as tribal liaison, and even to currently, Corey, I'm currently under contract and providing legal services to the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe and the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe to address issues with respect to their criminal justice system, to provide some level of prosecution services. So I have independent contracts right now with two tribes. And I think we can do better. We need to do more outreach. We need to understand and acknowledge their sovereignty. It's unconditional. That we need to look at that and ensure that we're doing everything we can, from issues with respect to how we get bad guys out of Indian country and negotiating extradition agreements, to more cooperation at every level between the state and tribal governments.
Great. And last question. We're here. We're recording on Wednesday, May 30th. We've got a primary vote 6 days away. You and I don't get much to vote on as Democrats, but we do have Amendment Y, which deals with Marcy's Law, the Crime Victims Bill of Rights that South Dakotans passed in 2016. In general, you can address the merits of Amendment Y specifically if you like, but in general, what's your understanding of how that Crime Victims Bill of Rights is working and how it's impacting the function of both the Attorney General's office and law enforcement and prosecutors around the state?
The individuals involved in the implementation of Marcy's Law, I think, deserve some credit for looking at some of the issues with respect to administration and trying to work out a solution and not just going for some sort of statewide repeal. So I like the amendments that are on the ballot. I think they address the issues in terms of preserving and protecting the rights of victims and ensuring at the same time that law enforcement and transparency don't suffer in terms of meeting the requirements of Marcy's Law. So I think the amendments are good. There needs to be transparency with respect to where crime happens, what neighborhoods, who's involved, and the interpretation was that some of that information was being restricted by the provisions of Marcy's Law. So I think this is a nice approach in terms of preserving victims' rights and at the same time ensuring transparency and also ensuring that law enforcement can adequately do their job with respect to the investigation of crime.
Randy Seiler is with us on Dakota Free Press today. He is a Democrat from Fort Pierre, and he's competing with Tatewi Means for the Democratic nomination for Attorney General. That nomination will be decided at the Democratic Convention, June 15th and 16th. If Mr. Seiler wins the nomination, he'll be on the ballot against the Republican nominee in November this year. Randy Seiler, thank you very much for speaking with Dakota Free Press.
Corey, it was an honor to be here. Thank you.